whole system is breaking down, especially in Western Europe and the United States. The financial system is a basket case, and use that to combine with a globalized central bank digital currency, which will give them complete control over and above institutions of sovereign nations. And what's the purpose of this? Well, for one, it's their own survival. So you remember the old statement that they attributed to Louis XIV of France, the war king? He said, "Après nous le déluge," after us the flood. If we go, everything goes. That's the mentality of an oligarchy, that if we can't dictate our ways and control things, then we don't care if the whole thing crashes. What the potential for a, what you might call a paradigm shift out from under this depopulation mafia of Klaus Schwab and others into a world of sovereign states working together for global development. That's the potential we have.
If you have not been looking at C60 as a means to significantly improve your health and your immunities, you should be. Here's why. First, a strong and healthy immune system is your body's first defense. And for those with a strong immune system, your body will adequately fight illnesses without medical intervention. Second, C60 is safe. As long as you're taking a high quality C60 with no added fillers or solvents. Third, C60 is the best means of removing free radicals from your body that exist. It's at least 200 times better at this function than vitamin C and any other antioxidant. This is the magic. When you free up your body's resources from fighting free radicals, they then can focus their attention on healing. Every person has different needs, but the magic begins when your body can start to heal. So now it becomes clear, you need the best free radical fighter that exists, and that is C60 with black seed oil and curcumin. Go to sarahwessel.com/shop and learn more about why this formula is so powerful. Also available by diffuser with ultra refined C60 oil to safely get directly into your lungs. It's also the best way to help your family pets by just being in the same room. Be sure to read the research and, of course, use the current coupons to save money when you buy. Remember, keeping you and your family safe is the most important thing you can do. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Okay, on my quest to determine what's really going on between the globalists in China and Russia, and the fact that we have so much propaganda, it's absolutely incredible. The goal is always to make people think that something else is going on. So I don't trust what our media is putting out there. I don't trust it from, obviously, from Russia's standpoint, from China's standpoint. From no standpoint, it's very difficult to trust the media. We've seen them be so bad and lie so much that we're at a point where we need to pull back and really figure out what's going on. I wanted to bring Harley Schlanger in for two reasons. In my last show with Kevin Schwartz, where we talked about Russia and the aggression that's happening in Ukraine, it's very serious, by the way, I talked about the LaRouche Pack and how that organization has been split into two, and that I talked about not trusting their analysis because of one side and how probably a couple employees, I don't know, how they're analyzing COVID. And because of that, I think it's important that I bring Harley Schlanger back on because I really actually respect Harley and what we said, and differing in opinions of anything is not bad. And I'm not sure if we differ that much in opinion in general, although I struggle with his China views. I think that China is like everywhere else, where we have the globalists and we have the people who are taken in by the propaganda, and we also have the people who are taken in by the corruption, and then we have everyone else. And of course, there's other agendas in the everyone else, but it's pretty much everyone else. And China has that same thing. And so the question is, How much of this is controlled by the globalists? How much of it is controlled by all that corruption? And is China seeing an opportunity here that they want to take advantage of once the West falls? I would think they are. And so it's important for us not to be naive. But as humanity grows, we know that, and with the technology we have, and smart individuals who are not psychopaths would see that we really need to cooperate at a different level if we want to survive as a species. And so maybe China's there. I don't know. I would guess that groups of people in China are there, just like groups of people in the United States are there. But really, what is the reality? Because we aren't that great here either, because we're controlled by the globalists. But anyways, we also talk about the seriousness of Ukraine and the Russia situation. And one of the things that Harley says is that, Ms. LaRoche said in a conference, we could seriously be in a nuclear war in 2 to 3 weeks. That's how serious this situation is. Tulsi Gabbard went on Tucker Carlson recently and really was concerned in saying that nuclear war is not off the table here either, and that this is very serious. And, you know, Biden, they keep pushing and pushing. And my question to Harley is, are they psychopaths to the point where if they can't have it, no one can have it? And that's a pretty serious question. So we're going to talk about what's really going on with China and Russia and the Ukraine situation. So before I get into that, again, I want to tell you that you can go to sarahwestell.tv or Ebonier, and you can subscribe. You get exclusive access to my videos. I'm going to start putting up some of my older ones that were exclusives that Patreon deleted, because there are so many good ones there. So I got to go through that and get those up for you. And give me about a week and there'll be some really good videos up there. And again, that's how I'm supporting the show. And whatever you can do to help by sharing or supporting my affiliates, whatever you can do to help. Sharing is just as good as supporting my affiliates or joining Ebonier. It's all good. I just I appreciate any effort that you make to help out and get the word out. So thank you all for being there. And let's get into my interview with Harley Schlanger. Hello, Harley. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Good to be with you again.
I'm always happy to talk to you. I want to talk about a couple things. We talked about, I had a recent show where we talked about China and the LaRouche Pack and things. And I think it's important to bring you back on because you being part of LaRouche, and I always want to be transparent and honest and everything else. And I want to talk about this China. People are worried. You know, when you hear pro-China, I think everybody's getting confused. I like to think of it, and this is what I talked about before we got online, is that we really have a global movement. It's the people who are controlled by the globalists or who are snowed or brainwashed by the propaganda against everybody else. And that's worldwide. And so you get bad actors from China. We're getting bad actors from the United States. We know there's bad actors from the United States because we see it daily. So I see this as a, you know, so I see China doing nefarious things. I just, because we've been covering it. I've said Kevin and Ed on, I've had other people on. But that doesn't mean that this isn't a global initiative where there's good people all over the world fighting together to get rid of this global tyranny, you know, coupled with depopulation and COVID and the currency that they're going after. What do you view? Because you talk a lot about China being an, you know, somebody that we really need to work with. And I think that is missed in this whole shuffle.
Well, I'll tell you why we say that. It's actually very simple. As you pointed out correctly, the whole system is breaking down, especially in Western Europe and the United States. The financial system is a basket case. And the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, the Davos billionaires, came up with a plan that was first formulated publicly about 2 years ago at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where they basically presented what they want to do as a financial regime change, which we now call, they're now calling the Great Reset. Now, all this is a move toward more power for central banks coordinating a global economy. And what I mean by that is the end of any sovereign control over money and finance. They already control credit and currency, the central banks, and they operate as the agencies of the largest private banks. But what they put forward as the Great Reset is they'll now control fiscal policy, that is spending policy.
Budget.
Now, how are they going to do that? They're going to use the Green New Deal and use that to combine with a globalized central bank digital currency, which will give them complete control over and above institutions of sovereign nations. And what's the purpose of this? Well, for one, it's their own survival. But secondly, they have been committed to global depopulation, going back to the launching of the so-called environmentalist movement in the 60s and 70s. The Earth Day, the Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, the whole movement to convince people that human beings are the scourge of the planet. And we basically have to get rid of human beings, except, of course, for those who are so superior, such as the oligarchs. So this is a long time coming, this battle. But it's coming to a head now because their financial system can't stay in place much longer. Based on this bubble, they're trying to create a new, bigger green bubble. And that's why the Great Reset has been put into motion.
Well, and let's talk about China, though, because people get concerned because there's the fear that, you know, we know that China was involved. There's evidence of, there's their data evidence, footprints of them involved in this election fraud. There's evidence of them having troops up in Canada, and there's evidence of them wanting to have our resources. You know, I am not for a second thinking that, I mean, we need to have a good relationship with China and every country in this world to have a path forward for prosperity and peace. But at the same time, we can't be naive and not think that there's nefarious characters in China, just like here in the United States and in England.
Well, there are nefarious characters in every country, but here's the question. What's the policy of these countries? And here's where it gets very interesting. And I'll tell you where people in the United States are getting misled on the China question. You know, with LaRouche, we're not advocating the Chinese system for the United States. The Chinese system, as it's presently constituted, is working all right for China. They've continued to have growth. They're lifting people out of poverty. But what is it that is the objection to China from the globalists? And Sarah, you can't miss this. I know you see this. The globalists want regime change in China because China rejected one key aspect of the Great Reset.
The bank.
They will not allow Western banks to come in and take over their economy. After 2008, when we bailed out the criminal speculators, when the Western world gave them quantitative easing and allowed them to take over all the foreclosed homes they kicked families out of, the Chinese did something different. They put some of those bankers in jail. They strengthened their control for regulation over banks so banks couldn't engage in speculation. They couldn't take people's deposits and put them into bubbles. And on top of that, China has a lot of dollars. They've got a lot of money. And the bankers thought that since they helped build China with the free trade agreement, which is definitely true, the Western banks, the Western corporations helped make China an economic power with free trade agreements. At a certain point, China said, well, we don't want to just be a source of cheap labor. We wish to increase the standard of living of our population. And that was the first break between the West and China. And when the Chinese insisted that they use their dollars to invest in infrastructure, to invest in a space program and nuclear power in the Belt and Road Initiative, that's when you started hearing all of a sudden attacks on China. Now, why are there so many attacks on China today? Well, why on Russia also? Russia and China will not go along with the Green New Deal or the Great Reset, and neither will India. John Kerry was in India last week to tell them they have to go with zero carbon policy. And the Indian energy minister and Modi, the prime minister, said, well, we think that's okay for you, but we're not going to do it because we want to develop. That was a big kick in the teeth to John Kerry. I don't think people in the United States heard that because it wasn't covered in the United States. So if you have India, Russia, and China rejecting the Green New Deal, and most Americans, I don't think, like the idea of the Green New Deal or the idea of a global central banker's dictatorship. Who are our allies to fight this? We can't go to the British. We can't go to the French. We can't go to the Germans. They're all in with the Davos crowd. President Trump was not in with the Davos crowd. And that's why Trump was so interested in forming an alliance with Putin and also with Xi Jinping until March of 2020, when the pandemic became a political issue for him. But before that, what was he doing? He was working with Xi Jinping to bring North Korea to heel. He did a trade agreement, phase one, which was designed to even the playing field a bit. And you remember what he said, Sarah? He said he doesn't blame the Chinese for taking advantage of free trade. He would have done the same thing. So we have reasons we could work together. And I think what's most important is to realize that much of what we're hearing about China as a bad actor, we're doing the same thing, including surveillance state, including economic scorecards and things of that sort. But we're not hearing about what the Chinese have been saying to the American business community, which is we still want to work together.
Well,
so if we want to beat, but just let me finish
yeah,
the point.
Yeah, keep going.
If we want to beat the Great Reset and the Green New Deal, we have allies out there.
Well, and that's what we have to identify, because we know a big chunk of our own country is not our friend. I mean, that's the sad part. The majority of the Americans are. They're waking up to it, but there's a lot of useful idiots, and there's a lot of corruption and people who are bought out. Now, how much of China is corrupt and bought out by these same actors and who are being manipulated or controlled by the same actors we're fighting? And do they have that much power in China, or is China, does China have the power to, and if they, this is the other question, there's a two-parter question. Do the bad guys control enough people in China, and is China realizing this whole thing's going down, are they likely to come in and take the spoils when everything falls apart? That's what people are scared of.
Well, there's this whole theory called the Thucydides trap, which Graham Allison, a historian, put forward, which is that whenever you have a dominant empire start to crash and another new empire emerging, they'll either, I think in 12 out of 13 cases he identified historically, there's a war. Now, the Chinese have said they don't see this as a Thucydides trap because they're not trying to overtake the United States. They realize, look, China depends on the dollar. China depends on trade with the United States. They would be much weaker if they ended up with an economic decoupling with the United States. So I think you have a lot of people in China who are very nervous now, but are looking to the United States with hope that we'll be allies. And historically, that's the way the Chinese have looked at the United States going back before communism. Remember, we were allied with the Chinese nationalists in World War II. So the real question then is, what happens if you have the, as you call them, the bad actors in the United States who do have, I would say, more control over the United States than bad actors have in control of China?
You know, I'm trying to get at how much control do they have, because if they're trying to move their power base to China, I mean, that's the other theory. They're trying to move their power base to China. I mean, this is just such a quagmire. I realize the propaganda is so thick. And when it's so anti-China, you start wondering, well, what's going on? I don't trust propaganda at all. And people need to start waking up. When there's thick propaganda, you got to look at it and go, well, wait a minute. We know that the propaganda is so bad in all these other areas, and suddenly they're telling the truth here?
Well, and Sarah, that's the key point. One of the points I've made for the last 3 years is the people who ran Russiagate against Donald Trump and then Ukrainegate and did everything they could to destroy his administration, these are the same intelligence networks, corporate networks, that are running regime change operations against Russia and China. Now, that's an important fact that people started to realize during the whole Mueller investigation, when they saw that there was nothing there. The whole argument that Russia hacked the elections in 2016, that Russia hacked the Democratic Party, the Russians were meddling. Mueller had tens of millions of dollars. He had the whole media behind him, the intelligence communities of the whole Five Eyes, the US, Canada, United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, they couldn't find anything. They couldn't find any evidence because it wasn't there. But they kept at it.
And they were drooling to find something. They wanted to take Trump down so bad.
Yeah. But what was it they didn't like about Trump? They didn't like about Trump that he wanted to work with Russia and China. And this is a crucial point that I think Americans have to come to terms with. If you look at the Trump administration for the first 3 years, what was he saying about Xi Jinping? He's my great friend. He's smart. We can work together. We can do deals. What did he say about Putin? He said, what's so bad about wanting to be friends with Putin? Trump was on the verge of getting a nuclear arms agreement with Putin in July 2018 when they met in Helsinki. And that was sabotaged by the war hawks in both parties. And remember, the war hawks in both parties voted against Trump on trying to move troops out of Syria and Afghanistan. They want war. The corporate cartels, they're really corporate fascists, the people who are trying to build this global dictatorship. And whatever else he is, Trump believed in American as a sovereign nation state. Now, this is what he had in common with Putin. When Putin came in, he was trying to take Russia back from the globalists who nearly destroyed the country during the Yeltsin years. And whatever else you think about Xi Jinping, he's going to defend China from these global interests. Now, there are divergences on where you're going to go with various aspects of policy. That's why you have diplomacy and negotiation. But to throw it all out and say, these are our enemies and we have to attack them, and then you look and see we're doing exactly what we're accusing them of doing, that's where you see the fraud and hypocrisy. And I think that's a good starting point for Americans to figure out who really is the enemy of this country and why do we have so many of them in positions of power in the United States?
Well, and that's what I'm trying to get to the crux of. How much, because I think we've identified these globalists are our enemy. They're the enemy of humanity, as far as I'm concerned. If they're trying to depopulate in the way that they're trying to depopulate and take control to the extreme and get rid of our sovereign nation, then they are our enemy. My question is, are they in control of China, or is China in control of them? Now, China does have some of their own scars, like the Uyghur Muslims and the Falun Gong and that re-education stuff, and that's really bad stuff. But we got some scars too, and we don't want to. I don't think we haven't stooped to that level yet when it comes to our own country. Although I know the UN and our alignment with UN is kind of scary because the UN has done some pretty bad stuff worldwide. But my concern is making sure that those globalists are not in control of China and using China as a tool for their needs. And that's the narrative that we have to make sure we flush out. And that, because China obviously want to work with all these countries. We need to work with these countries. We got to stop these wars. We got to st If we want to prosper as humanity, we have to be able to be at peace with these countries and stop these kindergarten playground fights. But if the globalists have control of key parts of China, we need to identify that because that is the problem.
Well, as you probably know, Mrs. LaRouche has been in and out of China quite often the last decade. In fact, going back to the 90s, when the Chinese first started moving with the Belt and Road Initiative, they took a lot of that idea from something that Lyndon LaRouche wrote about the idea of how the Transcontinental Railroad in the United States under Lincoln created a continental economic power. And the Chinese took this idea of corridors of development that LaRouche wrote about, that you're not just connecting cities, but you're actually creating pipelines, you're creating new cities, you're creating new potential science centers and research centers and so on. And that's what the Chinese have embarked on. Now, look, have they been a tool at times of globalists? Well, they went along with the whole free trade agreement for an obvious reason. They saw that as the only way they could build up their economy. And so they did take advantage, let the Western corporations come in, set up shop there, and use the cheap labor. But what did the Western corporations do with that? They used it to shut down industry and factories in the United States. So it was our corporations, our corporate cartels that used the willingness of China to allow them to be exploited, to make the money. At a certain point, as I said, the Chinese decided they wanted to increase the living standards of the Chinese for obvious reasons. If you got 1.4 billion people and 1 billion of them are poor and unhappy, you've got a problem. What China has done is lifted 800 million people out of poverty. Now, that's poverty by UN standards. So it's still, it doesn't mean a US style middle class. But what are we doing? We're reducing the size of our middle class with the economic policies imposed on the United States. So you have these global cartels that are at work. But what is it that they want, Sarah? This is the important thing. They want countries to submit to a world government, what George Herbert Walker Bush called the New World Economic Order, where cartels dictate the policies and sovereign nation states no longer exist. I often refer to a book written by Walt Wriston, who you may remember was the head of Citibank for years. In the 1980s, he wrote a book called Twilight of Sovereignty, in which he laid all of this out. He said sovereign nation states are a threat to the profit that bankers and financial programmers can make because they concern themselves, sovereign states, with the welfare of the people before private interests. And he said, for a nation to flourish, the private interests must flourish first. Now, if you take that to its full extent, you have the British Empire. And that's what these anti-sovereigntists really represent. And remember, when Trump gave his major speech at the UN in September 2019, when he spoke about sovereignty, he didn't speak about some vague notion of America first. He said, our government, the American government, should put the interests of the American people first, but so should every other government in the world put the interests of their people first.
Because every interest differs where you're at and what you need. You have different resources. You have different resources. You have different focus of skills. It's just different.
That's right. But there's no reason to go to war over that. In fact, that's where diplomacy begins, where you recognize that there are common interests between nations, and where there are divergences, you try and figure out how can we deal with these without going to war. And that's the difference between Donald Trump and the war hawks who control both major parties. Now, that's why they drove him out of office. And I think if you start with that and realize that Trump, in that sense, has more in common with Putin and Xi than he certainly does with Macron or Merkel or Mario Draghi in Italy, you begin to get an idea of what the potential for what you might call a paradigm shift out from under this depopulation mafia of Klaus Schwab and others into a world of sovereign states working together for global development. That's the potential we have.
And that's what we need. And the propaganda is so thick, and people have so little trust that we just don't know who to, I mean, being honest, you don't know who to trust because our propaganda is so bad. They're wielding this fake pandemic on us when there are treatments. And the reason I say it's fake is there's something out there, but they're faking the numbers. And that's been proven. They're censoring and they're banning treatments. And that's been proven. And the vaccines has more side effects than the treatments do. And that's been proven. So that's why people have such a low level of trust. And so we have all this propaganda. And can we trust these people too? I mean, who knows? But I do see people going, I want to talk a little bit about Russia here. The whistleblowers, I have multiple whistleblowers that have gotten asylum that I know that I've interviewed, they've gotten asylum in Russia. Russia seems almost like we were back 30 years ago as far as protecting people. I know they're corrupt. I know they have issues. But my gosh, what happened to us as a country? And then what's going on here in Ukraine where we are provoking war and we are acting like thugs? So can you talk a little bit about Ukraine? It's very dangerous. It's as if the globals, they're almost saying if we can't win, no one can win, and we will take us to oblivion before we'll let anybody else win.
So, you remember the old statement that they attributed to Louis XIV of France, the war king? He said, "Après nous le déluge," after us the flood. If we go, everything goes. That's the mentality of an oligarchy. That if we can't dictate our ways and control things, then we don't care if the whole thing crashes. Now, when you talk about Russia, again, we have to realize that Russia is not the Soviet Union. It's very different today. And this is where, for a long time, the war hawks in the West still looked at Putin as a KGB operative working on behalf of a communist party. But Russia has moved to much more of a mixed economy. They do have a problem because they still have oligarchs who are tied, excuse me, to the City of London, to the raw material cartels, and so on. But Putin is dedicated to uplifting his population, just as he set up the Eurasian Economic Forum. He set up a number of these different groups so that the Russians could continue to trade. And then what happens? Here's the irony. You hear Blinken. What a phony this guy is. He talks about a rules-based order. But what's the rules-based order? You do what our central bankers tell you to do, those are the ones who make the rules, and if you don't, you're the bad actor. Now, what's the Ukraine thing about? The Ukraine was hit with a coup in February 2014, which was coordinated by the point man in the Obama administration for it, namely Joe Biden. And people who think Joe Biden is nothing but a senile, fragile old guy, maybe he's that now, but in 2014, he was on the scene with George Soros, with Victoria Nuland, with the National Endowment for Democracy, with Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele was in Ukraine working with the Biden team to overthrow the elected government. And they put in a government which included within it Nazis who traced their roots back to the collaborators in Ukraine with the Nazis during the occupation in the 1940s. In other words, real diehard Nazis, the Azov Battalion, the Banderistas, and they wanted to wipe out the Russians, the Hungarians, the Romanians, the Jews, all the so-called non-Ukrainians in Ukraine. And once this coup took place, they tried to ban the use of the Russian language. They did a number of things, but this is why you have breakaway republics in the East and why Crimea voted by such a large percentage to go back to Russia. Now, remember, many Americans initially said, "Oh, Putin's no good, Russia's no good." And that's what they used to try and get Trump, that he wants to work with Russia. But during the 4 years of Russiagate, I think a lot of Americans had their opinion change about Russia and about Putin, which is good. But what's the Biden team trying to do now? They're going back to the idea of putting Ukraine into NATO so they can move troops to the border of Russia. Now, when the Soviet Union fell, one of the agreements that was reached between Bush, President George H.W. Bush, and Gorbachev is if you peacefully take down the Warsaw Pact military alliance, NATO will not move eastward. And as soon as Gorbachev did that, what happened? We kept moving NATO eastward. And this is why the Russians don't trust the United States. They did trust Trump, but what they saw is that Trump wasn't in charge. You had these false flags, these so-called chemical weapons, the Syria question, even though the Russian military and US military worked together in Syria to defeat ISIS. So what we should realize is that the Russians would like to have a relationship with the United States. The biggest problem they have is the American corporate elite with their ties to the British, to NATO, and so on. So Zelensky, the president of
It's
Ukraine,
the globalist cult.
yes, exactly.
It's this globalist cult that we they're a cult. Every indication is that they have lost their minds. They're a depopulation cult, and I don't know how they got that far off track, but this is what we're dealing with.
Well, it started, as I said, in the 60s after the assassination of Kennedy, because think back a little bit. I don't know exactly how old you are, but if you know something about the 50s, 60s, and 70s, we had a growing physical economy then. We had science, we had new technologies, and I don't just mean computer games, but I mean new methods of producing steel more cleanly and cheaply, real scientific breakthroughs. But starting in the 60s, that was considered a threat to the environment. And they actually created the attitude for many young people with Earth Day and things like that, that human beings are bad for the planet. Not that the planet is influenced by things such as solar radiation and solar flares and the where our solar system is in the galaxy, but by the fact that we have automobiles and industry. Now, if that were the case, how did we have hot ages and ice ages before there was human man, human civilization? Why does Mars have global warming right now? Because there are two rovers up there?
Out of the last 10,000 years, 9,900 years have been hotter than it is today.
Yeah, the whole global warming thing, the carbon dioxide thing, is a scientific fraud. It's another reason why you can't trust people. The real scientists have been silenced. People like Dr. Happer, who just spoke at one of our conferences, the Princeton physicist who was for a brief period of time on Trump's National Security Council. They'll tell you carbon dioxide is not a poison, but everyone else, I mean, if you talk to any high school kid now, they think carbon dioxide is a poison. Well, we produce carbon dioxide when we breathe.
It's just crazy. Well, how do we get so many scientists who are so uneducated on this, so miseducated on so many things, just like our doctors, our scientists, our education system at every level has really gone astray?
Sarah, it's money and corruption. If you can convince someone that
It's
they're,
just incredible, though.
well, if you can convince someone they'll never be anything more than a low-level assistant professor unless they buy into the latest theory, there are people who are courageous and who fight, but there are also a lot of others who are more driven by opportunism. Look at the Congress. How many congressmen? Now, here's a perfect example. They passed a bill in June of 2020. This goes to the Syria question, but called the Caesar sanctions, which said it's a humanitarian act to help the people of Syria by imposing sanctions, which will shut down any business conducted with Syria, which means now 90% of the population of Syria is below the poverty level. They have food shortages, medical shortages, shortages of everything.
That's my point.
Well, but everyone in Congress voted for it, thinking this would help the people of Syria. Could they have been so stupid to believe that?
I wonder how so many people can be sheep that are in positions of power. We have a cult who has way too much power, who are very, very, very corrupt, and it's very scary. We've already established that we both think that they are willing to blow it all up if they can't keep it themselves. It's a very serious situation. What do you
Well,
think
look what they.
we can do? Go
These are
ahead.
the people who killed. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say I just kind of summarize where we're at right now. We have this crazy group who's they can't have it, you can't have it, and they're going for it all. What do we need to do?
Well, these are the people who killed John Kennedy. These are the people who tried to kill Reagan and then tried to use George Bush to control the Reagan administration. These are the people who ran the operations against Trump. These are the people who ran de Gaulle out of power in France. They have a long history. And if you actually look at the British Empire, they've been doing this for 200 years. But we beat them. We beat them in the 1770s. We beat them in the War of 1812. And we beat them in the Civil War when they were backing the South trying to break up the country. Now, they took a different track after that. They said, instead of fighting America, let's bring America in on the side of the empire. And that was a fight in the whole of the 20th century. And they didn't really win that one until they killed John Kennedy and scared the hell out of every politician. And at the same time, poured huge amounts of money. They basically said, if you go with us, you'll be rich, you'll be powerful, we'll make sure you get reelected, and so on. And they took over education, they took over the culture. And that's what we're fighting. But here's the point, Sarah, that this is really the interesting thing. How many millions of people voted for Donald Trump in spite of all the propaganda against him?
Well, he won in a landslide.
At least 75 million or more. Yeah.
Yeah, he won in a landslide, and he caused Congress to overturn, all the Senate to be overwhelmingly Republican, all that stuff. It was all fixed. It was fixed down to the city council level.
Well, but here's the point. Most of those 75 million people are still angry about what happened. And now, increasingly, people who voted for Biden are getting buyer's remorse. You know, I pay a lot of attention to what are, you know, liberal progressives, people like Glenn Greenwald, Jimmy Dore, Max Blumenthal, who are anti-Trump but are increasingly enraged at Pelosi and Schumer and the Democratic Party because they realize the Democratic Party is not an alternative. It's a one-party system. Now, in 2008, 2009, after the crash, there was an opportunity to pull together the Tea Party and the Occupy Wall Street. It didn't happen because the Occupy Wall Street fell for the promises of Obama, who was one of the most gifted liars we've ever had in the presidency.
Yep.
Now, today, Biden is not a gifted liar. And the people around him are not particularly sympathetic. The remnants of the Clinton administration, the Obama administration. I think there's a majority out there that can be won. The question people have then is, how do you get that through the ballot box when it's controlled by corruption? That's where we have to work on a local level to change the way votes are counted. That's why there's so much opposition to what the Georgia law was. That wasn't a Jim Crow law. That was an attempt to correct the mistakes that were there in the 2020 election. We have to fight like hell through the 2022 midterms to have people on local boards of elections, county commissions, city councils, so that we can make sure that votes are counted. At the same time, we recruit people to vote for the right candidates. That is, not Democrats or Republicans, but American patriots who believe in a sovereign republic under a constitution. I think that majority is out there to be recruited. And if we could do that and then work with other countries that are opposed to this globalist system from NATO, from the European Union, from the British Commonwealth, then we could get the world back on the right track. So this is not the time to sit there and say, they're so powerful, they always win. They've been winning, but we haven't begun to fight.
Oh, we can't ever go there because, like, I think I've come to this conclusion that they're willing to go all the way. They're ruthless. They're an evil cult. And so we can't back down. How dangerous. First of all, I agree with you. We have to work at the local level. If we don't fix the election, nothing else matters. These things we have to get it right. But how dangerous is this Ukraine situation?
It's extremely dangerous. Tony Blinken was in Brussels yesterday meeting with Stoltenberg, the head of NATO. The Ukrainian foreign minister was there also, and he was saying, please bring us into NATO right now. We need lethal weapons to combat the Russians coming in. Now, here's the interesting thing. As crazy as these guys are, the generals are saying, look, if we have a war in Ukraine, we're going to lose. This guy, Douglas MacGregor, maybe you remember the name. He was brought in with Miller toward the end of the Trump administration. MacGregor made a statement the other day. He said, if we had a war with Russia and Ukraine, we would lose and we would have to go to nuclear weapons within a week.
Yes, that's what I'm
and
hearing.
So
the nuclear
options. Well, what MacGregor
options.
Said is, he doesn't think that the military would go along with that. In the same way, the whole question of China, there was a very interesting report from the War Games last November that the U.S. military ran. The guy in charge of them, who was, I think, the head of the South or the Pacific Command, Indo-Pacific Command, said the question in our war games is not, did we lose? But are we losing faster today than we were a year ago? We don't have a military with the capability of winning large-scale wars with Russia and China without resorting to nuclear weapons. Now, fortunately, you may have doctors...
Can I intercept you for a second?
Yeah.
Is part of that because we stopped promoting the best and the brightest and we're promoting political hacks?
Exactly.
And so it just completely screws up the whole military.
Well, and it happens in the military, too. Look at Mike Pompeo, number one in his class at West Point. And he never met a war he's not committed to getting us into. That's why Trump had to bring in Miller at the defense secretary to replace Pompeo's old buddy Esper. You know, you have this war faction. And remember, this is the cartel, the military-industrial complex, which now includes big tech. And they think they can snow us and brainwash us and distract us with entertainment and convince us that there's no choice but to go with them. But the real question here is don't trust the politicians. And the military has made some bad decisions. They've gone along with these guys. But look, every person who's been in a command position in Afghanistan and Iraq knows that these wars were not winnable short of a full massive assault, which the American people couldn't afford and wouldn't support. So what were they doing? They were conducting genocide, biding their time, waiting to see if something would happen. And finally, what did happen? Russia came in and ended up working with the American military to crush the caliphate in Syria. So, Sarah, we've gone way over the hill here, or over the cliff. We're like Wile E. Coyote, still pumping his feet, not yet recognizing that he's over the cliff. And you need people who will say, look, we're over the damn cliff. Let's get back to the fundamentals. We need to start producing something. One of the benefits, let's say, of the whole COVID crisis is we realize the stupidity of giving up our supply chains.
Well, and I got to tell you, giving up our supply chains, so then we put ourselves at risk for not having what we needed. But we also, in a very evil way, the globalists cut off the supply chain to the poor of the world, and it's causing another 270 million people to die of starvation. Which is way more than the COVID.
Well, that's what David Beasley, the head of the World Food Program, has been warning about. Remember, he's a Republican governor from South Carolina who's been courageous in standing up against the non-governmental organizations and the UN and others, saying, look, these people are starving to death and we're not providing any aid. He was just in Yemen. You have 8 million children in Yemen who are facing starvation because of the war that's going on there. So, you know, there are people who speak out, but there aren't enough people yet listening. And, you know, I look at someone like you who, you know, you and I may disagree on certain things, but essentially we're out there fighting every single day to bring to people the truth. And the truth is they're being lied to. They're being subjected to brainwashing.
But that's the problem, is that we're working really hard to bring the truth. And I tell my listeners this, it's really hard for us to get to the truth sometimes too, because it's so obfuscated. You know, it's so difficult. And so where we're arguing is a lot of times it's because we have two different sources of information. And that's the problem. But I think we're reuniting. I think people all over the world are uniting. That's what gets back to my theory that it's the people who are brainwashed by the globalists or corrupted by the globalists versus everybody else.
Well, Sarah, going back to last summer, I was doing a series of speaking engagements, and people were saying, well, you can't stop the Great Reset. You can't stop the Green New Deal. And I said, wait till they try to tell the Indian government that you can't have coal-fired plants to provide electricity to people. Wait till they tell the Chinese they can't have coal-fired plants. And the Chinese are moving to clean coal because they do have a pollution problem. Now, what happened, as I told you at the beginning, when Kerry went to India, he had his head handed to him because the Indians said, well, we're not going to go along with this. And I don't think 800 million people in Africa are going to give up on the idea of having electricity just because you say There's a global warming problem. So we can win this fight. The majority of the world's population wants development. They believe in a better future for their children and grandchildren. Whereas the oligarchy says they don't care about children in the future. They only care about controlling things now. And if you start with that, that the real division is not liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat, but imperial oligarchs versus Republican citizens. We have to show people that the real virtue of being a Republican citizen is that you can, at your dying day, look in the eyes of your grandchildren and say, I did what I could to leave you a better future. And that's where you get satisfaction and a sense of knowing that you lived a good life. And if people begin to realize that's more important than how many sensual pleasures they can cram into a life or how much money they can stick in a bank, but you can say, I did something good for the future. That's our greatest calling card. And that's what Americans used to believe in. And that's what I think we can rally people around again today.
I hope so. Well, we have to. And I think there's a worldwide movement of people, and we just need to unite. And that's what they're the most scared of. But we also have to be aware of what they're capable of doing, and we have to neuter that. I suppose it starts with the local elections and those things. But these people won't stop at anything. They're very evil.
But Sarah, you're absolutely right that even doing something locally doesn't mean you take your eye off the global picture. And I think this is one thing that Americans start thinking, well, I can't control local elections, so how can I control anything internationally? The starting point is become a real citizen where you're engaged in the real debates. You know, our country was founded around debates on such issues as Plato versus Aristotle. That's what Ben Franklin with the American Philosophical Society, what Hamilton and Jay and Madison did with the Federalist Papers. You know, there used to be barroom brawls over what Madison and Hamilton and John Jay wrote in the Federalist Papers. Now there are barroom brawls over how much you're paying for a quarterback for the New York Jets. You know, so if we can actually get to these serious questions again, and it doesn't mean we give up on entertainment and sports and everything else. It means that we recognize the priority must be, as a human being, that you are endowed with certain capabilities that can make the world better for everyone, including yourself. And it's sometimes a fight to stay concentrated and not get distracted or get disorganized. But I think that's the fight we have to wage. I believe that this is where the future is going to be determined. Now, to get back to the final point I want to make, what you were saying about Ukraine is extremely important. I was just on with Mrs. LaRouche with a webcast we did an hour ago. And she warned that we could be in a nuclear war in 2 to 3 weeks if there's not a pullback. Now, the Russians they don't want a war. They've been through terrible wars. In World War II, there were almost 30 million Russians who died. So they don't want a war, but they're not going to give up their sovereignty to people like Tony Blinken and Jake Sullivan and Joe Biden. And this is a test of nerves over Ukraine. And I think what NATO is going to discover is that if they play games in Ukraine and they let the Ukrainians push against the Russian population in the Donbas, they're going to have a very hard lesson, the same lesson they had in Georgia back in 2007. It's not pretty. Hopefully it won't go to nuclear war. Hopefully someone with intelligence will say to Biden, don't unleash these war hawks. But that's really what we're facing, that kind of crisis. And it means we've got to speak out about it. We've got to be very vocal. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk with you. And I also am very happy to see that you have a grip on this global problem, which some people I talk to don't have.
Well, it's just so important. This is the crisis of our day. I mean, this is whether we're going to continue, we're going to move in the direction of humanity, or we're going to fall back into some kind of Middle Ages. You know, I mean, it's very scary.
You know, we just put out a report called The Great Leap Backwards, which is available on the LaRouche Pub website. And what it talks about is what happens if you start shutting down coal plants, nuclear plants, fossil fuel plants, and try to replace them with solar panels and windmills. Just look at what happened in California the summer before last when they had blackouts. Look at Texas this winter with the Texas deep freeze. What happened with windmills and the so-called sustainable energy? It's not sustainable, it's not reliable, and it's not efficient. You cannot provide for a world of over 7 billion people by getting rid of the energy flux dense systems that produce the power that's needed. And that's one clue that the people pushing this know very well. They're committed to a population reduction, and that's why they're for the Green New Deal.
Exactly.
So that's a good starting point for people to when they start thinking about this. And if people are interested in reading that report, send me an email and I'll be happy to send you a link to it.
Well, we have this this immediate problem of in 2 to 3 weeks, there could be a nuclear war if people don't back down. We have a Biden who is clueless and really can't lead us out of that if he has the wrong people around him. What can the average person, what can a journalist who is in a position to, with a lot of influence, what can these people do? I know there are courageous journalists out there that are on Fox News or on CNN. You have to have some more courage than what I'm seeing when it comes to this level of severity. What can people do that can make a difference?
Well, I'll give you two simple hints. People can share your videos. People can make sure that your videos, in spite of the censorship, get much wider circulation. And similarly, I write an article every single week that I post on my blog page, which is now getting circulated. We're getting it translated into German. It's getting out in Germany. It's getting out in Italy. I've got a number of correspondents now in the United Kingdom and Australia and Russia. So, you know, those of us who know some things should speak out boldly, and our people who are listening to us, help us get the word out. And the more we do, I mean, I think that's how Trump won the election in 2016. The media allowed him to talk to the people, and the people listened. And I think that potential is still there.
Well, thank you so much, Harley. Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for just everything you're doing. I know you're very committed to this, and that's what we need. So thank you so much. And how can people reach you?
Send me an email to my personal email address, and I'll send you for free a link to my blog page. So that email address is harleysch@gmail.com, harleysch@gmail. And you can go to the LaRoucheOrganization.com, which is our new website, and you can find my daily updates there. I do a 10 to 12 minute video update every single day.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Sarah. It's really wonderful to get to talk again.